أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا وحبيبنا حبيب إله العالمين محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين. Before we continue with our discussion about ta'wil, just a couple of clarifications from what I said in the past two nights. When I said that according to tradition, Prophet said to Ali, peace be on him, that I fight on tanzil and you fight on ta'wil, and actually fighting on ta'wil is more difficult, as is quite apparent. It probably caused some minds to think that so Ali, peace be on him, is more important than the Prophet, because fighting on ta'wil is more important than fighting on tanzil. Well, that doesn't mean that. I mean, everything had started by the Prophet, peace be on him. And why Prophet did not fight on ta'wil? Because everyone accepted what he said. While after him people disputed and argued about what the Prophet meant by different things or what the Quran meant by different things. If there was such a disagreement at the time of the Prophet, they came to the Prophet and it was resolved. He was the final judge. But after the Prophet, people had their views and their opinions. And therefore the fight on ta'wil, the battle for ta'wil, started after the Prophet. And that doesn't mean, of course, that a Prophet is less important than anyone. You remember Ali ibn Abi Talib has mentioned very clearly, it is reported in Nahjul Balagha as well, that Ana Abdun min Abida Muhammad, I am a slave of Muhammad. In many respects, whatever he knew, whatever he learned, whatever he was blessed with, it all came through Muhammad, peace be on him. Of course, when he say Abd, not in the sense of Muhammad being, peace be on him, being God and he creation of him, but just like Abd and Mawla, a servant. I'm a servant of Muhammad, peace be on him. The second issue which I got from the feedbacks, and we had in questions as well, was that why didn't Prophet clarify everything in his own time so that there should be a dispute about the ta'wil of it? Well, first of all, even if the Prophet clarified it, the dispute would have been transferred to what the Prophet had said. It wouldn't have resolved the dispute. And secondly, not everything happened at the time of the Prophet. The need for ta'wil is ongoing as the history develops. New things come up and new questions come up. And then new decisions should be made. And that is where the ta'wil is needed, as we will, inshallah, see in our discussion about the meaning of ta'wil. Now, if you, inshallah, bear me for a couple of nights, I will try, to the best of my knowledge and my ability, to explain what ta'wil mean in the Quran and what meaning of ta'wil we intend to pursue here as something which for which a battle took place. So ta'wil have different meanings. I'll try to explain those different meanings and then why it will become something of a disputation and people should seek guidance in that. And then there is another thing that should be clarified. We have two things about the Quran, ta'wil and tafsir or tanzil, and we have zahir and batin, the exterior meaning and the interior meaning, the exoteric meaning, the esoteric meaning, as some mystics say. Are they identical with tanzil and ta'wil? Is batin equal to ta'wil, the interior meaning? The inner meaning equal to ta'wil or interpretation, and the outer meaning equals to tafsir, zahir equals to tafsir. This is what we have to clarify as well. And inshallah, if this is clarified, then we can continue examination of the history. However, after every session, what I would like to do, because we are talking about this, to somehow find some clue that why this event of Karbala happened. As I said, it is something which no Muslim can believe, and no outsider can believe, that Muslims have done this to the grandson of their prophet. So I would like to somehow open a conversation with history and historical figures. Just 10 minutes, 15 minutes towards the end of my talk, to somehow clarify for ourselves what happened. As I said, it is extraordinary that the grandson of the prophet, who was regarded to be the most honorable Muslim in his time, was killed in such a battle, so brutally, and no one said anything, and no one did anything. This is so extraordinary. So I would like to open a sort of conversation here. Now, with regards to ta'wil, the word ta'wil has been used 17 times in the Quran, but in different meanings. Literally, ta'wil is from awl. أَوَّلَ يُؤَوَّلُ تَأْوِيلًا. That means to return something to its origin, or to return something to its intended origin. This is the meaning of ta'wil. So when we talk about ta'wil, we want to somehow return something to either its original meaning, or its original source, or whatever we may take the origin of that thing to be. These 17 occurrences of ta'wil in Quran have been used for three different things. One, ta'wil al-ru'ya, that is interpretation of the dream, returning the dream to its unseen meaning, to the meaning which is unknown to us, and then actually returning the very reality of that dream, the very dream to the reality which takes place according to, corresponding to that dream. This is the meaning of ta'wil of the dream. The only place where this meaning has been used is Surah Yusuf. Of course, several times. Several times the word ta'wil has been used in Surah Yusuf in this sense. إِذْ قَالَ يُوسُفُ لَأَبِيهِ يَا أَبَتِ إِنِّي رَأَيْتُ أَحَدَ عَشَرَ كَوْكَبًا وَالشَّمْسَ وَالْقَمَرَ رَأَيْتُهُمْ لِي سَاجِدِينَ. I saw the sun and the moon and 11 stars, they were prostrating to me. Now, what Ya'qub mentions to Yusuf is that كَذَلَكَ يَجْتَبِيكَ رَبُّكَ وَيُعَلِّمُكَ مِنْ تَأْوِيلِ الْأَحَادِيثِ وَيُتِمُّ نِعْمَتَهُ عَلَيْكَ وَعَلَى آلِ يَعْقُوبَ. Allah in this way have chosen you. He is going to teach you ta'wilul ahadith. This ahadith here means dreams. What people talk about regarding to their dreams. Now, would everyone know this ta'wil? No. I mean, it's very rare among the people who really know what is the ta'wil of a dream. And ta'wil and ta'bir, ta'bir means to clarify, and ta'wil are used for dream in two different senses. When I make ta'bir of a dream, explaining a dream, I say, what is actually this corresponds to in terms of meaning? I saw 11 stars and sun and the moon prostrating for me. What does this mean? What does this correspond to? Someone who knows the ta'bir or ta'wil in this sense knows what does this correspond to, even if vaguely. Just like what Yusuf mentioned to his to his cellmates, and also to the king, when the king saw the dream of thin cows and fat cows eating each other and other things, he said, What does this mean is that there will be 7 years of famine, after which there will be 7 years of good harvest. What is the relationship? What is the relationship? Now, if you think about this very deeply, you will see when we talk about relationship of a verse and the ta'wil, we may be thinking about this sort of relationship. This is one meaning of ta'wil, which we usually say ta'abir, and this is what the king used, Malik. Of course, not Pharaoh, because Pharaoh was a term used for the kings of Egypt at the time of Ramses II, at the time of Musa. He was called Pharaoh. Before him, they were called Malik. And this is why Surah Yusuf doesn't use term Pharaoh. وَقَالَ الْمَلِكُ The Malik said, أُعْتُونِي بِهِ أَسْتَخْلِصْهُ لِنَفْسِي This is the term which is used in the Quran. Now, the Malik said, I saw these cows and those weeds that I saw in my dream, dry ones and fresh ones. Ya ayyuhal mala' aftuni fi ru'yai in kuntum lirru'ya ta'burun. Here is ta'bir, ta'burun, because he wanted to know the meaning. What does it mean? However, when this comes to reality, then that reality is the ta'wil of that dream, that reality. And this is what Yusuf says. وَرَفَعَ أَبَوَيْهَ عَلَى الْعَرْشِ When everything went nicely and his family came to Egypt, he elevated his parents to his throne, made them sit beside him, وَخَرُّوا لَهُ سُجَّدًا And his brothers prostrated for him. Not that he liked it, but they did it. قَالَ يَا أَبَتِ هَذَا تَأْوِيلُ رُؤْيَايَ مِنْ قَبْلِ This is the ta'wil of my dream. This is the ta'wil. That means this event which now is happening, my brothers prostrating for me and you are sitting beside me, this is the ta'wil of my dream I saw how many years ago? Maybe, I don't know, 40 years ago, something like that. This is the ta'wil. So this meaning is used in the Quran. This is ta'wil ru'ya. This hasn't got anything to do with our discussion about ta'wil. Returning the meaning to its origin. The second meaning of ta'wil used in the Quran is ta'wil al-amal. Ta'wil of the actions. That means returning the actions to their original meaning or to their real meaning. You see, I may act, I may do something, but you may not know what's the meaning of it. If now, for example, I stand up for some reason, which is absolutely hidden to you, you don't know the ta'wil of my action. If, for example, someone kills someone else, and of course the investigators should go and investigate, they want to know the ta'wil of that act. Why did this happen? What is the meaning of this? And this is used in the Quran as well. The meaning of an action or the eventual consequence of an action. Again, just like the eventual consequence of a dream or the meaning of a dream. The same thing for actions. Now, very famously, all of you know, if I mention it, in Surah Kahf, this meaning is very clear. Very clear. When Khizr did certain things and Musa didn't know the meaning of it. Didn't know the meaning. He took the apparent meaning. Actually, he took the tafsir of it. But he was unaware of the ta'wil of those acts. The intended meaning. So when, for example, حَتَّى إِذَا رَكَبَ السَّفِينَةَ خَرَقَهَا They boarded on the ship. He made a hole in the ship, destroyed the ship. That was the apparent meaning of it was really, really apparent. Something which Musa never could have imagined that Khizr, someone like Khizr of his degree would do. However, he didn't know the ta'wil of this. and killing that boy and rectifying that wall. At the end, what Khizr says, he says that سَأُنَبِّئُكَ بِتَأْوِيلِ مَا لَمْ تَسْتَدِ عَلَيْهِ صَبْرًا or لَمْ تَسْتَدِ عَلَيْهِ صَبْرًا. I will inform you of the ta'wil of what I did. What did I do? I made a hole in the ship. You thought that I was destroying it. This was what was apparent. However, that ship belonged to poor people. They were doing business with it. They were feeding many families. And the king wanted to go on a battle. And just a few miles down the river, he would have confiscated every ship. And this ship would have been confiscated with it. I made a hole in it so that this ship or this boat is kept for these people, is not confiscated. This is the ta'wil of what I did. And about the boy, and you know the story, of course, the boy and the wall. These are the ta'wil of these acts. Now you tell me. This is very important because many things Prophet did and the companions just saw apparently what he did. And they didn't know the ta'wil of acts of the Prophet, peace be on him. One example, Sayyid Ali Milani has a book, Sayyid Ali Shahristani, sorry, on wuzu un-nabi, the wudu of the Prophet. He discusses in detail this difference in wudu between Shia and Sunni. You know, this has become a sort of cumbersome problem. Why do we not wash? We wipe, and why they wash, or why we do once, they do three times, and all these things. He says, if we go to the root of this difference, we have two types of wudu. Thulathiyun ghasli wa thunaiyun mashi. A wudu which is performed with three washes, which of course according to the Shia, this is not allowed. You can't wash three times. You have to wash once, twice is jaiz, three times is not allowed. According to Sunni fiqh, three times. And also it's ghasli, you have to wash your head and feet, not mashi, wiping. Now he says, according to us, according to the Shia, the root of this goes to Uthman bin Affan. And the hadith, the sahih hadith reported from him, that once he said, I saw the Prophet made wudu in this way. And he asked for water and said, I show you how did I see the Prophet making wudu. And then he washed and washed his feet, washed his head. And said, this is the wudu that I saw from the Prophet. Now, Sayyid Ali Shahristani says that I don't want to discredit Uthman in what he saw. But did he really know the ta'wil of those acts that Prophet did? Were they not an introduction, a prelude to his wuzu? He wanted to cleanse himself. Because we have many traditions, we talk about wiping, then how this act could be in this way and traditions talk in that way? Of course, this is the Shia argument. They don't want to discredit Uthman's account. He says that the ta'wil of the act of the Prophet was different. He was doing some of them as mustahabbat, which were taken as wajibat, like gurgling, like istinshaq, madmada, washing the feet. They were done as istihbab. Maybe. And then, of course, the wajib part was different. This is what, of course, he says. I just mentioned this example to tell us that many acts of the prophets may have been performed in a way that the Khidr did things. We don't know probably the meaning of what he did. We have to inquire into history. We have to inquire, explore further to see what is the meaning of every act of the Prophet. It's very common among us in our society. Many people do things we take them to mean something, but they actually mean something else. And therefore, the acts need to have ta'wil, just like what Khazr did, and like many other things. This is, of course, the meaning of acts. The eventual consequence of acts also is mentioned in the Quran as ta'wil. Like, for example, وَزَنُوا بِالْقِسْطَاسِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ وَأَحْسَنُوا تَأْوِيلًا. When you do business, do it correctly, with good balance, because this has a better ta'wil, this has a better consequence. Eventual consequence of this is better than cheating each other. This is another meaning of ta'wil. Okay, these two meanings are not, these two categories, ru'ya, dream, and amal, act, are not our concerns now. The third category is ta'wilul kalam. So ta'wilul ru'ya, ta'wilul amal, ta'wilul kalam, interpretation of a speech. When we talk or when we write something or when we read something, there should be an ta'wil of it. Of course, there's a difference between ta'wil and tafsir. Now, ta'wil al-kalam, again, has two meanings. The same as the other two, has two meanings. One meaning is to take an act into a context and a time which it eventually takes place and establishes. This is used in the Quran. For example, the Quran talks about the Qiyamah, the Day of Judgment, and he says, هَلْ يَنْذُرُونَ إِلَّا تَأْوِيلَهُ. Do they expect but the ta'wil of it? That means that it will happen. We are talking about it, but you should expect that all these talks will one day become realities. يَوْمَ يَأْتِي تَأْوِيلُهُ يقول الذين نسوه من قبل قد جاءت رسل ربنا بالحق. The day when this ta'wil happens, that means this word finds its context, this statement finds its place of realization, then those who have forgotten it before would say that, yes, you can see now, قد جاءت رسل ربنا بالحق, the messengers have come with haq. This is haq, this is what we see. This is true. So this is one meaning of ta'wil. And the other meaning of ta'wil is, again, the intended meaning. The intended meaning. Just like what we discussed last night. وَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ زَيْغُونَ فَيَتَّبِعُونَ مَا تَشَابَهَ مِنْهُ ابْتِغَاءَ الْفِتْنَةِ وَابْتِغَاءَ تَأْوِيلِهِ. These statements in the Quran, some of them are mutashabahat. And these mutashabahat are those which may imply different meanings. Those who have some deviation in the heart, they seek to find the intended meaning while that intended meaning is not taught to them. How do they know what is the intended meaning of God? Just like this dispute which has been going among Muslim theologians since the beginning of Islam between literalism and rationalism. They literally say that, for example, whatever we hear about God's hands or eyes or coming and going and sitting, these are just physical things because this is the apparent meaning of it. Okay, this is the apparent meaning of it, but is this the intended meaning of it as well? Do we not need the ta'wil? And the ta'wil is also something that not everyone has the knowledge of. So this is another meaning of ta'wil. Just to summarize, ta'wil has been used in Quran 17 times. Ta'wil al-ru'ya, ta'wil al-amal, ta'wil al-kalam, the interpretation of the speech. And the interpretation of the speech, once we talk about the context in which things happen and find meaning. This is what the A'imma alayhimus salam said, that is ongoing. The verse doesn't have one ta'wil. The verse has many ta'wils. As long as the time goes and the sun and moon rotate in their orbits, as long as that happens, the meaning of a verse finds new ta'wil. Let me give you one example. Or I better leave this example for tomorrow night, inshallah. Because I want to open that conversation. That's very important, because this somehow puts all this discussion into context. What I want to do tonight, I want to discuss the issue of Karbala with one of the most respected companions of the Prophet, peace be on him, Abdullah ibn Umar ibn al-Khattab, because he is one of the people who advised Imam Hussein alayhi salam in Mecca not to go to Kufa. He's one of the people. Not actually that he shouldn't go to Kufa, that he shouldn't insist on not pledging allegiance to Yazid. Abdullah ibn Umar ibn al-Khattab was a young companion of the Prophet, of course. And he's respected very highly, very highly. His hadith, his fiqh, his piety, especially his piety, is very famous. And according to Bukhari, a tradition which is reported from Malik ibn Anas, from Nafi', Mawla Abdullah ibn Umar, from Abdullah ibn Umar, is As-Silsilatu al-Dhahabiyya. Very, very precious hadith. Highly authentic. There is no question about the piety of Abdullah ibn Umar ibn al-Khattab. And everyone respected him for this, of course. Nafi', who was his mawla, says, "Now, لو نظرت إلى ابن عمر رضي الله عنه إذا تبع أثر النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم لقلت هذا مجنون." Had you watched the way Abdullah ibn Umar followed every trace of the Prophet, you would have said that he is mad. However, this was due to his extensive love for the Prophet, peace be on him. كان يتتبع آثار رسول الله كل مكان صلى فيه أو قعد فيه حتى أن النبي نزل تحت شجرة فكان ابن عمر يتعاهدها ويصب في أسلها الماء حتى لا يتيبس. Any place that Prophet had prayed in, any place that Prophet had sat on, he used to pray on in that place. A tree that Prophet used to sit beneath it to take the shade of the tree, he was so scrupulous, so concerned that he would give these trees water these trees so that they do not go dry. And when he went to Hajj, and every year he went to Hajj, 1 year to Hajj, 1 year to Umrah, and whenever he went to Hajj, he tried to sit in Arafah, to camp in Arafah, where the Prophet had camped. He tried to pray where the Prophet had prayed. So you see the type of following and relationship. And he was so concerned about the blood of Muslims, so concerned that he didn't want to take part in any act which would have involved bloodshed. And that is why he took a neutral position in the battle between Ali and Muawiyah. And he said, If they say Hayya ala salah, I go and pray behind them. If they say Hayya ala falah, I go. But if they say come to kill a Muslim brother, I won't go. I wouldn't go. I don't want to be involved in any bloodshed. And also, again, Nafi' says that I asked him, Ya Abu Abdurrahman, Anta ibn Umar, the son of the Caliph. Wa anta sahib al-Rasul, you are a companion of the Prophet. Wa anta ant, and you are you. I don't want to compare you with the Prophet or to compare you with your father, your position. Just you are Abdullah ibn Umar yourself. Why did you not help Ali? Ma yamna'uka min hadha al-amr, ya'ni nusratu Ali. Why don't you help Ali? 18,000 companions are helping Ali against Muawiyah, and you just take a neutral position. Why? He said, "Yamna'uni anna Allah harrama alayya dam al-Muslim," because Allah has forbidden for me the blood of a Muslim. لقد قال الله عز وجل قاتلوهم حتى لا تكون فتنة ويكون الدين لله. Fight them until there is no fitna, that means no shirk, and deen, religion, is for God. ولقد فعلنا وقاتلنا المشركين, we fought against the mushrikun. حتى كان الدين لله, now the faith is for Allah. أما اليوم ففي من نقاتل, today why should we fight? لقد قاتلت والأوثان تملأ الحرم من الركن إلى الباب. I was fighting when the idols were filling the Kaaba from rock to the door of Kaaba. The idols were there until we purified it. أفأقاتل اليوم من يقول لا إله إلا الله. Should I now fight someone who says لا إله إلا الله? Is this correct? Now I'm clarifying his position. With all due respect. Now, because this has happened, if the qatl of Hussein, if the murder of Hussein had not happened, we didn't want to explore in history. Because this has happened, because the grandson of the Prophet is killed in that brutal way, now we want to ask some questions. Why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we ask questions? Now, let me mention one other thing. Towards the end of his life, he regretted why he didn't help Ali. And it is reported that when حِينَ حَذَرَهُ الْمَوْتِ, on his deathbed, he said, مَا أَجْدُ فِي نَفْسِي مِنَ الدُّنْيَا, I don't regret about this world for anything. إِلَّا أَنِّي لَمْ أُقَاتِلَ الْفِئَةَ الْبَاغِيَةَ, that I did not fight the transgressors, the rebels. فِئَةُ الْبَاغِيَةَ. Now, with all due respect, I want to ask a couple of questions from Abdullah ibn Umar. The first question is, يَا صَاحِبَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ, you recite Quran for us. You say, قَاتِلُوهُمْ حَتَّى لَا تَكُونَ فِتْنَةً. Fight with them, the mushrikun, until there is no fitna. But why you have forgotten the verse, وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اقْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلِحُوا بَيْنَهُمَا فَإِن بَغَتْ إِحْدَاهُمَا عَلَى الْأُخْرَى فَقَاتِلُوا الَّتِي تَبْغِي حَتَّى تَفِيءَ إِلَى أَمْرِ اللَّهِ. Is this not from the Quran? The verse that you have mentioned is about mushrikeen. But the verse that is mentioned in Surah Hujurat is about Muslimun. That if two groups of Muslims fight, you have to make peace between them. And if one is oppressing the other, then you have to fight them until they come back to Hukmullah. Did you discharge this duty? Is it enough for a Muslim to go to mosque and pray and to sit in his home and fast and not be concerned about who's haq, who's batil. Just say, they all say La ilaha illallah, is it enough? Then when we take this position, we come to a moment when the grandson of the Prophet is murdered and we cannot do anything, we cannot say anything. And we regret it. We regret it that this happened. Certainly Abdullah ibn Umar regretted that. He was quite sad that this happened to Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam. But what could he do? Now I want to ask him another question. You didn't give bay'ah to Ali ibn Abi Talib. And you said that after everyone have come and made the bay'ah, I will make bay'ah. And you didn't. You never gave bay'ah to Ali ibn Abi Talib. But you gave bay'ah to Yazid. Why? And look how history tells us the true stories. لَقَدْ كَانَ فِي قَصَصِهِمْ عِبْرَةً لِأُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ لَقَدْ كَانَ فِي قَصَصِهِمْ عِبْرَةٌ لِأُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ. There is a good lesson in their stories for us. When Hajjaj ibn Yusuf was appointed as Amir, Abdullah ibn Umar rushed overnight to give him bay'ah. Overnight to give him bay'ah. Everyone knows Hajjaj ibn Yusuf was a man of no scruples. And Hajjaj actually laughed at him and eventually killed him. He was killed by Hajjaj later on. Hajjaj laughed at him and said, Ya Aba Abdurrahman, why have you come overnight? I have just arrived. And you have come to give me bay'ah. He said, because I have heard from the Prophet, مَنْ مَاتَ وَلَمْ يَعْرِفْ إِمَامَ زَمَانِهِ مَاتَ مِيتَةً جَاهِلِيَّةً. This is the famous hadith from Abdullah ibn Umar. Whoever dies and does not know the Imam of his time, does not have a bay'ah on him, or has not a bay'ah with any Imam, has died mitatun jahiliya. And of course, this is sad. He was the companion of the Prophet. He was that pious man. And Hajjaj, that boy, as Amir al-Mu'min says, Ghulamu Thaqif, the boy of Banu Thaqif, in his predictions in Mahjul Balagha, he says, by God, you will be tried by Ghulamu Thaqif. And this Ghulamu Thaqif humiliated the companion of the Prophet. He said, my hand is in bay'ah with someone else. Come and make bay'ah with my foot. And he took the thumb of the left foot of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf to make bay'ah with. Why this humiliation? Why this humiliation? Where did the Ummah go after the murder of Imam Hussein al-Isa, after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein al-Isa? Where did the Ummah go? Why a respected companion of the Prophet should be humiliated like this? And look what Amirul Mu'minin says about this, that he had predicted that this is going to happen. He said that, this is from Nahjul Balagha, وَلَوْ تَعْلَمُونَ مَا أَعْلَمْ مِمَّا تُوِي عَنْكُمْ غَيْبُهُ إِذَنْ لَخَرَجْتُمْ إِلَى السُّعُدَاتِ وَتَبْكُونَ عَلَىٰ أَعْمَالِكُمْ. If you know what I know, by the knowledge that Allah has given me, of the unknown that is kept wrapped up from you, certainly you would have gone out into the open, weeping over your deeds and beating yourselves in grief. This is still the time of Ali ibn Abi Talib. Still Ummah hasn't gone that far, hasn't been tried by a Ra'i like Yazid. And then he says, beware by Allah. Of course, this is a longer sermon. It's very interesting. 116 in Nahjul Balagha. You better read this. 116 in Nahjul Balagha. He says, beware by Allah. A tall lad of swinging gait from Banu Thaqif would be placed over you. He would eat away your vegetation and melt your fat. And you cannot do anything then. You are rejecting the Umara al-Khair and Umara al-Su will come over you. Now, what Imam Hussein alayhi salam tried to convey to Abdullah ibn Umar was that, look, this ummah is becoming plagued by what previous ummahs became plagued of. Look what did happen to Banu Israel. This ummah is becoming the same. Should we sit quiet? You, the companion of the Prophet, should you sit quiet? Should I sit quiet? Can we? Are we allowed to do that? So when, this is in history, جَاءَ عَبْدُ اللَّهِ بْنُ عُمَرَ وَأَشَارَ إِلَيْهِ بِصُلْحِ أَحْلِ الظَّلَالِ وَحَذَّرَهُ مِنَ الْقَتْلِ وَالْقِتَالِ. He said, do not go for bloodshed. Abdullah ibn Umar said to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, do not go for bloodshed. Make peace. فَقَالَ يَا أَبَا عَبْدِ الرَّحْمَنِ. Of course, Imam Hussein had respect for Abdullah ibn Umar. We have respect for companions of the Prophet. But it's sad that this happened to the companions. This humiliating situation came to companions of the Prophet at the time of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf. Why? Because they didn't pay heed to exhortations. فَقَالَ يَا أَبَا عَبْدِ الرَّحْمَنِ أَمَا عَلِمْتَ أَنَّ مِنْ هَوَانِ الدُّنْيَا عَلَى اللَّهِ تَعَالَى أن رأس يحيى بن زكريا أهدي إلى بغي من بغايا بني إسرائيل. This world has no value. And the sign of it is that the head of Yahya ibn Zakariya was taken as a gift to an adulterer of Banu Israel. So what is the value of this world? If this happens, what is the value of it? Now I ask you, if the grandson of the Prophet is murdered in that way, thirsty, what's the value? What's the value of Muslims, of the Muslim community? Then he said, apparently this conversation is not fully reported. Apparently the context was that, look, everything is safe, although Yazid is a ruler, it doesn't matter. The market is okay, the Muslims are secure, I mean, economy is booming, something like this. Imam said, yes, of course, it may seem like that, but this wouldn't go on forever. أَمَا تَعْلَمْ أَنَّ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ كَانُوا يَقْتُلُونَ بَيْنَ تُلُوءِ الْفَاجْرِ إِلَى تُلُوءِ الشَّامْسِ سَبْعِينَ نَبِيًّا. Banu Israel killed in one occasion between Tulu' al-Fajr and Tulu' al-Shams. Between Fajr and sunrise, they killed 70 prophets. Then they went, opened their markets, and sat and started to do business as usual. كَأَلَّمْ يَسْنَأُوا شَيْئًا. As nothing had happened, and Allah didn't do anything for them, to them. And they thought that this will continue until فَلَمْ يُؤَجَّلِ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ بَلْ أَخَذَهُمْ بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ أَخْذَ عَزِيزًا مُقْتَدِرٌ. But the punishment came later. And then the final plea of Imam Hussein was, يَا أَوَا عَبْدُ اللَّهِ لَا تَدَعْ نُصْرَتِي. Do not leave me without help. Come and help me. This was the last plea of Imam Hussein alayhi salam from a companion of the Prophet. We don't blame the wayward people in Kufa or in Damascus. Our question is from the companions of the Prophet. Why they didn't do anything? Of course, they mourned for Hussein alayhi salam later on. They were upset about what happened. They cursed those who did it. But my question is, was that enough? Did they do enough? Did they help enough? And would their mourning and their grief rectify things which went wrong in Islam? Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi tahirin.
Thank you very much. We now have some time for questions and answers. Are there any questions?
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum as-salam.
Just a small question. In Dua Nudba, we say about the 12th Imam, وَيُقَاتِلُ عَلَى التَّعْوِيلِ. Could you please expand upon this point, please?
Yeah, it's the same thing that we mentioned about Imam Ali, peace be on him, and any Imam who finds, of course, the opportunity to protect the intended meaning of the Quran and of the Sunnah of the Prophet would do that. So yuqatilu ala ta'wil means that he will fight to establish the right meaning and the intended meaning of the Quran and the Sunnah.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Yesterday, we understood that you talked about the wrath of God on the Jews or the Christians, yeah? Now, would you not say in today's day and age, the wrath of God is on the Muslim world with all these wars happening, that the Muslim mullahs cannot sit together, they cannot have one Eid, because God can change the minds of these leaders. It's not difficult. So I would say that the wrath of God, with all this oil, with all this wealth that is blessed the Muslim nations with, the wrath of God is with the Muslim people more than anywhere else, than with any other communities.
Yeah.
This is what a lot of the outside people, non-Muslims, are saying. They're literally saying it verbally.
Yeah, good question. The wrath of God may be caused by different things. Now, when we talked about Jews, which, as I said, all the exegetes had given the clear instance of غير المغضوب عليهم. Of course, I didn't say Christians. Christians were those who went astray, deviated. The Jews, it was because they changed the meaning of the book according to the Quran. They changed, and for this reason, the wrath came. Now, when wrath comes, it doesn't mean that the wealth is taken away. It doesn't mean that the type of worldly affluence is withdrawn from people. That doesn't mean the wrath of God. Wrath of God might come and you even become more wealthy, but your heart is sealed and closed towards anything which is related to faith. You don't understand faith. You are not interested in it anymore. Your faith will become like an imitation. You don't get the real meaning of faith. And this is the wrath. And this is what Allah says, غَيْرُ الْمَغْضُوبَ عَلَيْهِمْ. However, about Muslims, let's come to Muslims. As I said, affluence and poverty is not any sign of wrath of God. However, yes, Muslims, after murdering Hussein alayhi salam, they deserve the wrath of God. They may have gone for a while prosperous and doing well and having faith flourishing, but as Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, suddenly the wrath comes and suddenly everything would go asunder. And if you ask my opinion, yes, the Muslims were punished for what they did to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And that is why, with all these ziyarat and crying, what we are trying to say, that Ya Allah, we are disowning them who did this to Imam Hussein. We are not part of them. We don't want to be counted as them, so do not have your wrath on us, as you had your wrath on those who killed Hussein alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much for the talk. A quick question about the apparent meaning and the ta'wil that's the alternative, and the fact that you can't always take the apparent meaning, because there is a ta'wil, or there is an understanding behind it which we might not know about. During the time of the Imams, that's more easier to distinguish between. But when you're a lot later than the Imam, and you're trying to say what is the actual meaning of something, is there any using any sort of ta'wil over another? Is very, very difficult, even if you say this is from the Imam, because you can't even know it's from the Imam, and you've got this probable issue.
Yeah,
so how do you deal with
that? Yeah. I think we have to discuss this in length, but very shortly, when the Imam is not there, what is our duty? We usually opt for rational understanding of things. And that's why, I mean, automatically we do ta'wil in many verses of the Quran, isn't it? All those verses which talk about the physical existence of God, we do ta'wil in them. We just turn them from the apparent meaning to a meaning which is rational. And we have to have people who are deeply grounded in knowledge of the Quran, and of course quite pure and faithful, to get those meanings, at least to get us close to better meanings. At the time of the ghaiba, we have no other choice. However, how this is done, let us go through it as we progress in this discussion, inshallah. And I hope that we are not misguided in whatever we discuss, because this is a very, very sensitive issue, especially this issue of ta'wil and how we can use this. It's a very sensitive issue. And inshallah, we'll try to seek the help of God to come to a good conclusion on that, inshallah.
I think we'll take one more question. Is there a question on the lady's side?
Thank you, Sheikh. When we try to compare the words in the Quran which relate fixed meanings and then which are mutashabiyah, as we say, so are there more mutashabiyah ayats compared to the fixed ayats?
Muhkamat.
Yeah.
Naturally, there should be, because usually when a sentence is issued from someone, it may take different meanings. So we can say that many, many verses of the Quran, we need help, whether help from our reason, from Sunnah, from Hadith, to find out what is the intended meaning. However, there is one very good way, which we will discuss, as I said before, and that is finding out the meaning of mutashabahat by the verses of the Quran themselves. That is what is called the explanation of the Quran by the Quran, returning the mutashabahat to muhkamat. This is a method which, as I said, those grounded in knowledge, rasikhuna fil ilm, may be able to do it. Now, rasikhuna fil ilm necessarily don't know ta'wil. Necessarily don't know ta'wil according to Allama Tabatabai, because he says rasikhuna fil ilm are a group which are below the ma'sumin, like Ayma alayhi wa sallam, although they are rasikhuna fil ilm as well, but they are above that. We will discuss this, inshallah. Hopefully. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Shaykh. We'll end there. Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, salawat.